Welcome to this Euretina Independent Medical Education podcast, supported by Roche and Apellis. This two-part series on the diagnosis and treatment of neovascular AMD is presented by Professor Anat Lowenstein, Head of the Ophthalmology Department at the Tel Aviv Sourasky Medical Center Israel and the Euretina General Secretary, and Professor Martin Zinkernagel, Chief Physician and Clinical Director of the University Clinic for Ophthalmology in Bern, Switzerland, and also the editor of Ophthalmologica, the official journal of Euretina. In this series, Professor Lowenstein and Professor Zinkernagel discuss diagnosis and treatment options for neovascular AMD. In this episode, their discussion turns to outcome goals for neovascular AMD treatment. They'll share their insight into various treatment protocols. They also consider the differences between trial data and real-world data, and how patient compliance can be improved to close that gap. Finally, Professor Lowenstein and Professor Zinkernagel discuss the new therapeutic options like extended release and longer lasting therapeutics. There's a lot to learn in a few minutes, so without further ado, we will hand over the discussion to Professor Lowenstein and Professor Zinkernagel.
Welcome to the Euretina IME video interviews on neovascular macular degeneration treatment fundamentals. I'm Dr. Anat Lowenstein, and today I am joined by Dr. Martin Zinkernagel. Hello, Martin.
Hi, Anat. Hi, everyone.
Very good to have you here with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Zinkernagel and myself will discuss key considerations for proactive and individualized anti-VEGF treatment approach for our patients with neovascular macular degeneration. Together, we'll address the best practices for diagnosing and monitoring disease progression, how to customize the treatment protocols, and how to set the individual outcome goals for each of our patients. Okay, so let's talk about customizing our approach to our neovascular AMD patients. When you see, Martin, you see so many patients and you are heading such a huge department and the huge clinical center, when you see this one person, this one patient, how do you determine for him the ideal outcome? Do you always run to make sure that the fluid is completely gone, or sometimes do you allow a little fluid in a certain compartment? Do you individualize it to the patients? What is your approach?
Yeah, so I think the outcome, if you talk about outcome, you want to have the best possible visual acuity for this patient. So I think outcome is really visual acuity on not OCT, you know, anatomy in OCT. So when you look at how you guide treatment, of course, then I would use OCT. I would also look at how patients respond to anti-VEGF therapy based on OCT or not on visual acuity. So visual acuity, as we know from the clinical trials, you know, can be totally different from what we see in the OCT. So patient being dry may not have, you know, a very good visual acuity because of other reasons. So the main goal for the patient is, of course, to get the maximum visual acuity with the treatment. And the second goal to achieve this first goal would be to have a dry OCT. I accept some degree of subretinal fluid if it's stable, but I think looking at the data also from the fluid study, other studies, it's still better to treat rigorously and intensive, even if the patient has subretinal fluid. So it's not a good idea just to stop treatment or, you know, increase the intervals too much if the patient has subretinal fluid. It's just, you may be a little bit more relaxed than with intraretinal fluid.
Yeah, I agree exactly. I don't chase their subretinal fluids if it's very stable and the visual acuity is stable, but I don't, it's not that I want subretinal fluid to be there. So it's because some people went further away and said that it might be protective. I'm not sure that we have enough data for that, but that I agree. I'm doing exactly like you are doing. What treatment regimen are you usually exercising? Do you treat and extend, PRN? And maybe there are some times that you might think about other protocols, fixed regimen. What is your routine?
Yeah, so I think, looking at all the regimens, I think it doesn't really matter which regimen you use as long as you treat intensively and as long as you keep the patient in your care and the compliance high of the patient. I prefer to use treat and extend because it allows for individualized treatment approach and patients usually are quite happy with it. I think it's important that they understand the concept. So if they know, if I have a dry retina, the intervals be extended and the treatment burden will lessen, they have a goal to achieve. I think it's also important to explain to the patient, and I think this is probably the most important thing, to explain to patients that the treatment will last for several years and will not be a one-off injection, so that the patient really knows this is going to be a relationship with the department or the physician for many, many years.
I think what you said, Martin, is the most crucial thing, because from my experience, when I started to treat patients, I told them 3 injections and then we'll see. And then they were all so disappointed when they actually needed more injections. Now what I tell them, you'll need at least 7, on average, 7 injections per year, and that's for all your life. So if I'm saying this, I'm getting much better compliance. And the other thing is that it's difficult to explain to a patient with whom you started PRN the concept of treat and extend, because they don't understand why all of a sudden they need to get treated on a dry retina. So it's also something that it's better to explain upfront, I believe.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, there are some situations where you may want to consider PRN, for example, if you have an only eye situation, maybe, you may want to consider PRN, or if there is a secondary CNV, not AMD related, you may want to do PRN, say a myopic CNV. But I would say 95% of our patients we treat with a treat and extend regimen.
Yeah, another exception to the rule would be patients that are actually on home treatment. It's a little bit more like PRN because they come, but it's a real PRN. So whenever they have fluid, then they come. So it's very difficult. I don't know how it is in other countries, but in my country, it's difficult to maintain the patient adherence. There are so many barriers to the adherence, difficulties to come, difficulties of the caregiver to come, a distance from the clinic, which surprisingly is an important point, parking, waiting time, whatnot. How do you maximize your patient's adherence, Martin?
So I think key is really to have a good administration. You need to have a good administration. Ideally, they will know their patients. They will know the patients better than you know the patients. And if you have such an administration, I think this has really will really help you, but also the patients to adhere to the treatment. Administration, calling up the patients if they miss an appointment, welcoming them when they come, feeling them welcome. There's a coffee machine in our waiting area. I think it's also very important how the theater staff copes with the patients. If the patient doesn't feel welcome, they're likely not to turn up again. So you really need to make a huge effort to be kind and welcoming to the patient and give the patient the best maximum therapy and treatment you can give.
I think you actually covered already my next question, which was what is your approach to actually effective communicate with the patients and how do you educate them for improved compliance? So I definitely think that what you said about having a nice setting and so forth is really important. But I want to ask you, Martin, in my country, it's very crucial. The waiting time is very crucial because patients are waiting quite a long time. And we were able to establish what we call a macula center that we're not able to put all the patients in it, but then they come and go after an injection within an hour and the compliance is much better. Do you have any experience in this?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, we looked at waiting times, and we implemented several measures to reduce waiting times. And I think one of the most important thing, if you have a large clinic, is to decouple the physician who's doing the OCT and the visual acuity from the physician doing the injection. So you can
exactly
work parallel. And I totally agree with you, Annette, because waiting time is the most annoying thing for patients. And if they have to wait for 3 hours in an AMD clinic, they're likely not to adhere to the treatment. And you can really plan these treatments. I mean, you know what the patient needs, you know, visual acuity, OCT, and an injection. So I think it's really up to us to optimize it. And if you can do within an hour, this is already this very good. I mean, this is a very short time.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's only to a subset of patients, but I think it's very good. Now, we do have some new treatments coming up, treatments that have already FDA approval, that have EMA approval, and are being reimbursed in many countries. So these therapeutic options that have longer duration and therefore longer treatment interval between treatments, or slow-release devices, do you think that these are a breakthrough? Do you think that they will carry a significant impact on patients' lives, on our lives, on the system's situation?
So I think this will be a breakthrough. I think it will really help patients. The only caveat I may have is that in a subset of patients, it may be more difficult for them to adhere to the treatment regimen, because what we sometimes see in our patients is that when they're on a very long interval, sometimes they're not so compliant as if they're on a very tight interval. So this is the only thing I would say, you know, in a subset of patients, we may have to be aware that compliance may decrease with long-lasting agents. But I think it will definitely be a breakthrough. It will be, you know, great for patients to have a longer interval treatments.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's going to have a really important effect, but we do need to monitor the patients and see who is actually suitable to be seen less often.
Absolutely. And once again, I think, you know, if we would have good and established home monitoring devices, combined with artificial intelligence, I think this would be, you know, quite the future.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've discussed today a lot of considerations for the diagnosis and treatment of patients with neovascular macular degeneration. I think that it what came up loud and clear from Professor Zinkernagel's opinions, and I totally agree with him, that it's really important to personalize the treatment to the patient. So to have an individual treatment goal and outcome goal for each patient's his disease, his ability to come, his compliance, his caregiver, and so forth, so that we have the best outcome for our patients. Thank you very much, Martin. I hope really that this Uretina IME video interviews will improve the audience's ability to effectively diagnose and treat neovascular macular degeneration patients in your individual practices. Thank you, and until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
It seems AMD treatment options are evolving and expanding all the time. So this was a timely discussion on the practicalities of these new approaches and customizing treatment approaches for patients. Our thanks to Professor Lowenstein and Professor Zinkernagel for such an interesting and informative discussion. Our thanks also to Apelles and Roche for their support of this Uretina Independent Medical Education podcast. In case you missed it, in part one of this series, Professor Lowenstein and Professor Zinkernagel covered the diagnosis of neovascular AMD. We hope you'll join us again for the other podcasts in the 2023 Uretina Independent Medical Education podcast series, which also includes discussions on geographic atrophy and DME management.